Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai, Madhura Dhamma Ki Jai, Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai, Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai, Ganga Maya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai, Bhakti Devi Ki Jai, Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda Ki Jai, Gaura Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Nama Om Vishnu Vadaya Krishna Prasaya Vidalaya Sri Mati Bhakti Vedanta Swami Niti Namani. Namaste Sarasvati Vidaya Gaura Vani Vacharni Nivasesa Sanivani Bhaskati Adi Sitarani. Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yutha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Chan Shri Rupam Sarga Jantam Sahagana Raghunatham Pitam Sam Sajivam Sadvoitam Sadvadutam Padichana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lavita Shri Vishakam Pitam Panchapa Patu Vishaki Pasanavya Pata Patitanam Pavanevya Vaishnavya Namaha Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. April 29th, 2015, in Potomac, Maryland. And we're going to look at Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 16, Text 26 to 30. And we're not going to read the whole Sanskrit because it's very long, and nor are we going to read all the word for word because that's very long. But we'll read the translation and part of the purport. Is that all right, everybody?
Yeah.
Okay. So this is the translation. It's quite a long translation. And there's 40 points here. So let's see how many of them you can remember, okay? All right? Everybody can remember at least like 3 out of the 40? We ready? Everybody ready? Kids, you ready? You ready? It's 40 points. 40 points? Okay. What about you? Heidi, what about you? Okay. In him, that's Krishna, reside 1. Truthfulness, 2. Cleanliness, 3. Intolerance of another's unhappiness, 4. The power to control anger, 5. Self-satisfaction, 6. Straightforwardness, 7. Steadiness of the mind, 8. Control of the sense organs, 9. Responsibility, 10. Equality, 11. Tolerance, 12. Equanimity, 13. Faithfulness, 14. Knowledge, 15. Absence of sense enjoyment, 16. Leadership, 17. Chivalry, 18. Influence, 19. The power to make everything possible, 20. The discharge of proper duty, 21. Complete independence, 22. Dexterity, 23. Fullness of all beauty, 24. Serenity, 25. Kindheartedness, 26. Ingenuity, 27. Gentility, 28. Magnanimity, 29. Determination, 30. Perfection in all knowledge, 31. Proper execution, 32. Possession of all objects of enjoyment, 33. Joyfulness, 34. Immovability. Can I have that? Thank you so much. Just what I wanted. 35. Fidelity, 36. Fame, 37. Worship, 38. Pridelessness, 39. Being as the personality of Godhead, 40. Eternity, and many other transcendental qualities which are eternally present and never to be separated from him. That personality of Godhead, the reservoir of all goodness and beauty, Lord Sri Krishna, has now closed his transcendental pastimes on the face of the earth. In his absence, the age of Kali has spread its influence everywhere, so I am sorry to see this condition of existence. Okay. Tell me one of them. Okay. Yes.
Immovability.
Determination.
Anyone? Yes?
Cleanliness.
Beauty.
Pridelessness. Being the supreme personality of Godhead.
Truthfulness. Control of sense organs.
Intolerance of another's suffering.
Mm.
Power to control anger.
beautiful.
Yes.
Cleanliness.
This little young man did there, right? Can you tell us why? No? Okay.
Cleanliness.
Yeah. Okay.
Faithfulness.
Tolerance. Simplicity.
Did you say one before? Okay.
Virility.
Yes, sir. In the
simplicity.
Back. All the way in the corner.
I couldn't follow.
No? Was I too fast?
I couldn't follow.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay.
Power to make everything positive.
Okay.
Tranquility.
And in the back there.
Kind-hearted. Steadiness of the mind.
Okay.
Faith.
Very nice.
Control of the senses.
Control of the senses.
Chivalry.
Yes, chivalry. Okay, very good. So the one we're going to be picking to talk about tonight is the 14th one. Anybody remember what the 14th one is?
Grateful.
Well, it is, but it's not stated as such. What's stated as the 14th one is knowledge. Now, we're going to look in this purport. Sorry, it's a little hard. Oh, here we are. Okay, this is the middle of the purport. It's a long purport. The 14th quality... Oh, what was the 14th quality again? I forget.
Knowledge.
Oh, thank you so much. Can be further divided into 5 subheadings. Okay, we're going to have another 5 here. Everybody ready? This time I want the kids to say something. All right? So can you listen? I have your eraser, so you should be able to listen now, right? All right? So we have 1, 2, 3, 4 kids here. We got 5 subheadings. So see, are you a kid or are you not a kid? What do you want to be? You're not sure. Okay, so these 5 subheadings of knowledge are intelligence, gratefulness, the power of understanding the circumstantial environments of time, place, object, and time, 4, perfect knowledge of everything, and 5, knowledge of the self. Can you tell me one of those?
Intelligence.
Excellent. Can you tell me one?
Knowledge of the self.
Good.
Gratefulness.
Gratefulness. And he's hiding. Okay. So we're going to be looking specifically at gratefulness. And Srila Prabhupada goes on after this list of 5. He says, only fools are ungrateful to their benefactors. The Lord, however, does not require benefit from anyone besides himself because he's fooling himself. Still, he feels benefited by the unalloyed services of his devotees. So the Lord feels very grateful. The Lord feels grateful to his devotees for such unsophisticated, unconditional service and tries to reciprocate it by rendering service, although the devotee has no such desire in his heart. The transcendental service of the Lord is itself a transcendental benefit for the devotee, and therefore the devotee has nothing to expect from the Lord. So the Lord is very grateful, and he's very grateful to the service rendered by his devotee. He's so grateful that he wants to serve his devotee. I think one of the most painful experiences we have is when people are ungrateful to us. Isn't it? I think it's, you know, being cheated in some way, being deceived in some way, or someone being ungrateful is just... I really think it's very, very painful. I think it's more painful than illness or accident or loss. You know, that relationship where you just... There isn't a relationship. You know, it's all one-sided. Right? Where you're giving... So mobile phones are fine, but the music has to match the content of what we're saying. Otherwise... Otherwise, you can just put it on vibrate. If you don't know how to put it on vibrate, ask your neighbor, how do I put my phone on vibrate? And then he'll show you. So relationships that are very one-sided are very unsatisfactory. So if I'm loving someone and they appear to be loving me, but actually they're cheating me, I feel very disturbed. Or, you know, if I'm giving and giving and giving, the other person doesn't even notice that I'm giving, there's no reciprocation, again, it's very disturbing. Now, it's very tricky, though, because if I'm giving with an expectation of reward, then that's not love at all. At the same time, if it's all one-sided, that isn't love either. So how to figure this out? It's quite confusing. Because we're going to be talking about this at the Festival of Inspiration, about Krishna says to the gopis in the Rasa Lila that there's 9 kinds of human relationships. So we're not going to talk too much about that. But there is quite a bit of a discussion between the gopis and Krishna about being a merchant. And Krishna really condemns a merchant mentality. It says people who are merchants, there's no love, there's no friendship, there's no happiness, there's no dharma, there's nothing. So when we have a relationship with someone where we expect their gratitude, you know, if I do something for you and the reason I'm doing something for you is I want to get something back, that's not actually love at all. It's like, you know, you go to the store and you spend some money and you want to get something that's equal or what? Value? Greater. You want equal or greater, and you would much prefer the greater, yes? Right? If you go to the store and they're having a sale, you don't walk up to the manager and say, is it really okay? Are you going to be able to pay your employees selling these refrigerators so cheaply? So generally we want things on sale. And in a merchant relationship, we want things on sale too. In a merchant relationship, we want to be giving less than what we're getting. Now, there was a very popular book many years ago about the relationship between men and women, and the author had a whole section about men and women keeping score. You know what that means? Like in a sports game, they have the scores, how many basketballs this team scored, how many basketballs. So in relationships, we may also have a score. You know, and he had a little chart. I don't remember it exactly. But you buy your wife some flowers, she gives you 5 points, like that. You mow the lawn, she gives you 4 points. I don't remember exactly what it was. But something like that. And unfortunately, most of our human relationships are something like this. I mean, if we're really completely honest. And we know they're like this when we sit down and say, I'm giving and giving and giving, and what am I getting? And we also know they're like this when we cease to be grateful for what other people do for us because we think that we deserve it. We think we've paid for it. No, I've already paid for it. If I pay for it, I deserve it. And why should I have any gratitude? If I go to the store and spend $20 and I get $20 worth of stuff, am I grateful to the people in the store? But I paid for it. Why should I be grateful? I think I deserve it. And this attitude of deserving and merchantness, for lack of a better word, I just made that up, it destroys relationships really completely. Because giving this example of a shop, a store again, If I have $20 and I go to the store and I buy something that's worth $20, how do I feel? How do you feel?
Normal.
Just normal, okay. Suppose you go to the store, you spend your $20, and you get home and your friend comes over and says, you spent $20 on that? I can get it for only $5. Ooh, then how do you feel? Really bad, right? But if you spend your $20, you bring something home, and your friend says, oh, you got that for $20? Wow, that usually sells for $100. Then how do you feel?
Jubilant.
Yeah, jubilant, yeah. So it's interesting that our feelings of happiness are in inverse proportion to our feelings of deservedness. The less I feel I deserve something, the more I enjoy it. And the more I feel I deserve it, the less I enjoy it. In fact, you know that there's a lot of criminal behavior that comes just from the feeling of I deserve. I deserve people to treat me a certain way. You know, they've done research that the main reason, for example, that a man will beat his wife is he thinks, I deserve my wife to treat me in a certain way, and if she doesn't, well, what can I do? I don't have any choice. I don't want to hit her, but, you know, she's not living up to my expectations, so what else am I going to do? And this is the basic mentality of, you know, I deserve, I am entitled, and I'm entitled because I've earned it. You know, I've earned it by my hard work, I've earned it by my intelligence, by my good karma, etc., etc. But the sad thing is that whenever we get what we believe that we have earned, or we believe that we deserve, we get no pleasure out of it at all. You really just get no pleasure out of it. Right? No matter how wonderful a meal somebody cooks for you, if you think that you're entitled to it, it's not really very enjoyable. And when we have very high entitlement, we don't enjoy anything. So we don't want to have that kind of relationship. In fact, as we said, Krishna says that isn't even a relationship at all. He said there's no love, no friendship, no dharma, and no happiness in this kind of a relationship. And whether we're having this with our spouse, with our children, with our parents, sometimes people have to try to have this kind of relationship with their spiritual master, or they try to have this relationship with the institution of ISKCON. You know, I've worked so hard, and ultimately we try to have it with Krishna. You know, that Krishna, I've been chanting 16 rounds or more for so many years, you know, and I've offered all my food, and I've woken up early in the morning, and I followed the four regular principles, you know, even when I didn't want to, and I was nice to the devotees, even when I didn't want to. And we have this whole list of things, you know, that we've done, and we present Krishna with our list, and we say, here, I've paid for unlimited transcendental bliss in my ticket to Goloka Vrindavan. So that's not a relationship. Now, but at the same time, that we don't want to have a merchant relationship, a relationship where there's no gratitude at all, it's not love. You know? If there's no gratitude coming from the other side, if I don't feel grateful and the other person doesn't feel grateful, it's not really a relationship. If I'm just feeling grateful for you, but you don't care about me, I'm not important to you, it's not a loving exchange, is it? Is it? You know, and all of us, we actually, psychologists will say that we have a need, an actual need, to feel valued, to feel that we have meaning to someone. In fact, you could say if we want to define what is love, what do we mean by love? Well, love is you're fascinated by something. You know, like this young man, he's fascinated with the designs in the carpet. Before I took his eraser, he was fascinated with that. So that love, though, we're fascinated, right? You look at your little newborn baby and you're counting their toes over and over and over and over and over and over and over again, right? Or some young boy, young girl, they're in love and they're just staring. You've seen the young boys, young girls, they're just staring at each other. Look at every eyelash. So we're fascinated. We're even fascinated by our machines when we love them, yes? So, but that's not enough. Just to be fascinated by something isn't enough. Just to find Krishna attractive, that isn't enough to say that we love him. I mean, the gopis are so fascinated by Krishna, they don't even want to blink their eyes. You know, Mother Yasoda can hardly bear for Krishna to go in the forest in the morning. But that isn't enough. Also, for there to be love, you have to value the other person. They have to be important to you. Right? If you find something fascinating, but you don't really care about it, that's not love. Right? And love is also that you depend on someone. We're not going to talk about that today. That you can depend on them, and they can depend on you. We mostly want to talk about that somebody is important to you. So when I love somebody, they're important to me. Whether they live or die is important. This is one of our criteria for love. When someone dies, you're grieving. Right? If someone dies and you don't love them, you don't grieve. We only grieve for people we love. If you drive down the road and there's some car accident and the ambulance is there, but you don't know the people, then you're not crying, right? But if you notice, oh, that's my sister's car, then it's a whole different thing. So this is part of love, that person is important to us. So many people are going here and there every day. But when it's someone that I love and they go someplace, then we say, I miss them. Correct? Okay? Right now, so many people are getting on an airplane, so many people are getting in a car. I don't miss any of them. I don't really care if they're here or not. So that's not love. That love means I value them. I feel that what they do is important. And gratefulness is very much like that. That what the person does is important. So we need to feel that someone else is important to us, and we need to feel that we're important to somebody also. You know, it's interesting, again, this feeling when we do it materially. It's not very satisfying, and it leads to this merchant exchange. But you can't just give it up and say, well, I'm just not going to care. I mean, I'm just not going to care whether or not anybody values me. And I'm not going to care whether or not there's anybody that I find valuable in my life. Because it's part of our spiritual nature. It's part of Krishna's nature. Krishna is so much valuing the devotee. Right? We're just reading this in Prabhupada's purport. that Krishna is grateful for the little service, and very little service. Patram pushpam phalam toyam yome bhakti prayatati taram bhakti paritam ashtami prayatati. You offer him a little flower and he becomes grateful for eternity. If someone says, I'm going to the Cinerama, he becomes grateful. I mean, that's extreme, I think. Yes. If you even criticize him, you know, even Putana comes to kill him, or Pondraka comes to kill him, and somehow because they're meditating on him. Now, I wouldn't be like that. If somebody was meditating on wanting to kill me, I wouldn't feel grateful. I wouldn't think, oh, at least they're thinking about me. You know, but that's what Krishna is very grateful. Even like I say, someone says, oh, let's go to the Cinerama and see the latest movie. And someone just gives them some water. I mean, me, someone gives them water, and I think, oh, of course they give me water. They're supposed to give me water. Right, but Krishna, you give him a little bit of water. And he's, oh, this is my devotee. Right? Or Yat Kuroshi, Yat Ignashi, Yat Tohosi, Yat Tapastasikante, Yat Kuroshi, whatever. Whatever you do, offer it to me. I mean, the things we're doing, let's be honest, they're not so important, yes, although we like to think that they are. But most of the things we do in our life are not very important. Most of us don't have a life that anybody would want to read about. I mean, if you don't believe me, you can go to somebody that you really care about and ask them, would you please spend the next 2 hours listening to everything I did today? And see whether or not they'd be interested. All right? Like I just... last night I was talking to my daughter, and I'm here with my son's son, who's grown an inch a month since we've been traveling. And he said, tell them that I'm now 6'2". And I said, I don't think they'll really be interested. So, you know, Krishna's interested, though. Every little thing of our life, Krishna's interested, and we offer it to him. So Krishna has this gratitude, and he wants also to be noticed. He wants to be noticed in the taste of the water, in the light of the sun, in the fire of digestion. He wants this. Krishna does not want a merchant relationship. He does not want a merchant relationship. You try to have a merchant relationship with Krishna, he'll stay far away. If you think bhakti yoga is some kind of ritualistic thing, this is one of the offenses. Just think the chanting of the holy name is some sort of pious ritual. And if you deal with him like that, you know, you'll get some pious credits, you can go to the heavenly planets. Maybe that's what we want anyway, I don't know. But you're not going to get that. Krishna's not going to appear before you and say, oh, my dear devotee, come home. Because they don't have merchants like that. It's not the kind of relationship. But Krishna wants us to have gratitude. I mean, I did a little research about finding where in the scriptures people show gratitude. And such a nice example given by Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur in the 10th canto, how Krishna plays his flute and the peacocks dance, and Krishna's dancing, and the peacocks feel so grateful that they danced with Krishna that they gave him their feathers to wear. So, of course, not only Krishna wears peacock feathers, but even the cowherd boys and the gopis, they also decorate themselves with peacock feathers. But this was a gift from the peacocks to Krishna because they were so grateful at his dancing with them. Or Daksha was very grateful to Lord Shiva for forgiving him. Yudhisthira was very grateful for the priest and his sacrifice. And so this is the kind of relationship that Krishna wants with the devotees. So how is this different from a merchant relationship? If Krishna wants us to be grateful, and he's grateful to us, and we want this naturally in our human relationships, how is that different from a merchant relationship? Anyone have any idea? Yes?
Based on love.
Can you explain that?
It's like, just because I have love and affection for somebody, I do without even having any expectation or without even thinking that I am being noticed for my offering. And I am not wanting anything back from that person. I just want to please that person.
Okay, so Prabhupada gave that as an example, didn't he, in the purport? Where Srila Prabhupada said that Krishna feels so grateful to the devotee that he wants to serve the devotee, but he said the devotee actually doesn't want to take any service from Krishna. The devotee is satisfied with his own service to Krishna. But I want to ask a question. Does a devotee want to be acknowledged?
Yes.
Yes. Anyone know some story like that in the 10th canto? It's in the Krishna book, where the devotee was saying, oh, Krishna will acknowledge me and then my life will be perfect.
Sudama.
Sudama, definitely. Okay, any more? Is that all right that I'm asking you to think on a weeknight? Did you just want to be entertained?
Gopis.
Gopis? Oh, yeah, they were mad. They were actually quite angry. Somebody else?
Kupcha.
Yeah, Kupcha, she did, didn't she?
Mother Yashoda.
Mother Yashoda, okay, yeah, she wants Krishna to be a good little boy.
Shabari
with Ramchandra. I was thinking, you all had wonderful answers. I was thinking about Akura. Akura is going to Vrindavan, and he says, when I go there, Krishna Balaram will call me Uncle Akura. Oh, my Uncle Akura. He said, my whole life will be perfect. And Srila Prabhupada says there that if one's not working to be recognized by Krishna, his whole life is condemned. What he says. Right? And Prabhupada would quote Bhaktisiddhanta saying, don't try to see Krishna work so that Krishna will want to see you. That's what we're working for. We're working for, you know, it's, I remember many, many years ago, I think it was in the Clinton administration, there was this 14-year-old boy who started his own business and he was concerned about the national debt. And so he sent the IRS a check for $1,000. And it came to the notice of then-President Clinton, who called him up and thanked him. So that's really what we're looking for. We're looking for Krishna to call us in and say, thank you. Right? As there's one nice story that Jesus tells, one of my favorite stories. He tells about a master who had three servants, and the master went on a trip, and before traveling, he gave some money to the servants. So one servant he gave 1 coin, one servant he gave 5 coins, and one servant he gave 10 coins. And when he came back from the trip, he asked the servant, so what did you do with the money? And the servant who had 10 coins, I think he like quadrupled it. The one who had 5, he doubled it. And the one who had 1, he said, I was so afraid I was going to get in trouble, so I buried it. And then the master gave the one who had increased, he gave them unlimited, and the one who had buried, he took away even that 1. But to the ones who had increased, the master said, well done, good and faithful servant. So this is what we are looking for. We are looking for this from Guru. We are looking for this from Krishna. Well done, good and faithful servant. This is really what the devotee is living for. When we are saying we just want to please Krishna, we want to please Krishna, but we want to please Krishna. You understand? We want Krishna to be pleased, but we want to please Krishna. And it's one thing that seeing somebody that you love has nice clothes that they're happy with, and it's something else seeing they have nice clothes that they're happy with that you bought for them. Yes? I remember when I was traveling, one woman gave me a sari, and I said, oh, I have all that I need when I travel. I can't take this with me. And she said, well, at least wear it once while you're here so I can see you wearing it. But this is the way the devotees feel. Devotees want to see that Krishna's wearing their garland, that Krishna's enjoying their offering, that somehow something that they've done has given Krishna pleasure. That is the pleasure of the devotee. That is the pleasure of the devotee. So it's that kind of gratitude that's a loving exchange. It's that kind of gratitude. Krishna wants to see that he has made us happy in bhakti. Because I think there's different kinds of gratitude even towards Krishna, isn't it? I mean, you can have even a motive ignorance gratitude, I suppose. Like Prabhupada said, the thief is praying to God, please let me steal tonight. And the homeowner is praying, please protect my home from thieves. And Prabhupada said, God is confused. He doesn't know what to do. So I think even in the motive ignorance, it's possible, yes? You know, you were able to rob a bank and not get caught, and you say, thank you, Lord, that I robbed this bank. Thank you that I just made this, you know, illegal drug deal. So there could be a mode of ignorance gratitude to God. I think there's been a lot of wars fought in the name of God, yes? Have there? Are there still some going on? Do you think there's somebody right now today who's just did violence in the name of God and thanked God for their violence? What do you think? Yes, or people thanking God for their meal of animal flesh or something like that, or their wine. That's a gratitude in the mode of ignorance. Gratitude in the mode of passion is, you know, because of God, I'm a prosperous person in the world. And there's a lot of religions who preach this kind of thing. Isn't that a fact? Yes? Worship God and you'll become rich and you'll become famous and you'll become healthy and you'll become happy in the world. Which, by the way, is generally true. If you have a God-conscious society, it's going to be prosperous. We have a problem right now in the world that it's not a very God-conscious society. But people will thank God for that. You know, thank you, Lord, for curing my mother of cancer. You know, thank you for letting me get this money at my job. And that's a kind of gratitude in the mode of passion. That's better than nothing. It's better than ahankara vimudha makartha hamiti manite. It's better than I'm the doer. You know, God, who's God? What do I care about God? And more, I think, in the modern world, people don't even thank God in that way. God has become irrelevant. He's just, God, what do I need God? Well, every once in a while I can go, you know, Janmashtami or Christmas or something, you know, but otherwise, who cares for God? And then there's gratitude in the mode of goodness. So gratitude in the mode of goodness is thank you, Lord, for my feeling of happiness and peace and my equanimity, and thank you for that. Thank you for granting me liberation from the troubles of life. But the kind of gratitude that Krishna really wants is a little different than that. The kind of gratitude that Krishna wants is thank you for letting me serve you. Thank you for giving me an opportunity to make you happy. Thank you for our loving relationship. Thank you for loving me. Thank you for being there that I can serve. Thank you for letting me serve your devotees. Thank you for letting me serve your mission. Thank you for giving me whatever I need in the service of your mission, for perfectly taking care of me, even though you may not always be taking care of me quite the way that I want. Just like those of you who are parents, you know, your children aren't always completely pleased with how you take care of them. Yes? They sometimes complain. You should take care of me in another way. So the kind of gratitude that Krishna wants is that we say, thank you, Lord, for taking care of me in your own wonderful way. Thank you for fulfilling all of my needs. I was talking today to a devotee who's having some problem in his marriage, and I said, you know, you can really rely on Krishna for your needs. And he said, well, isn't that very advanced? And I said, well, no, but you can start thinking like that. I said, actually, Krishna is already fulfilling all of your needs and meeting all of your needs, even your emotional ones, if you just simply open that door and allow yourself to be aware of it. So, Krishna, thank you so much for giving me everything I need for your service and everything I need in general. And thank you, thank you, thank you for allowing me to serve you. And what do I want? I want that Krishna's happy with me. That's what I want. I want that Krishna's happy and that I've had some role to play in that happiness. And that's the kind of reciprocation that I'm looking at. And that is love. Love is that I can make you happy and you can make me happy. Now, unfortunately, I think that many people, as they say, go through life without being grateful practically at all. And this comes from a sense of, again, entitlement and deservedness. And we have this sense of entitlement and deservedness as a very poor way to feel good about ourselves. You know, it doesn't work. Because when you think you deserve everything, as we said, nothing you get gives you any pleasure. Isn't it like that? You know, if we really have this sense of entitlement, I don't enjoy anything. So how are we going to feel good about ourselves if we enjoy nothing? Does that make sense? I'm going to feel really good about myself when I always think I deserve 100 times more than what I'm getting? I mean, I'll never feel good about myself. That's not going to work. You know, and we're so afraid that if we just feel grateful, that then we won't get what we need. Well, you know, if I'm grateful just for air, and I'm grateful just for water, and I'm grateful just for the light, well, then I'll never ask for what I need and I won't get what I need. But it's not really like that. It's not really like that. Because once I have that relationship with Krishna, I do have everything that I need. Om Purnamada Purnamidam Purna Purnam Udachate Purnasyam Purnamandaya Purnam Eva Vasishate. When I'm connected with the Supreme, I have everything. I lose everything, it doesn't matter, because I'm connected with the source of infinity. Infinity minus infinity is infinity. Somebody, the whole world can take everything from me. It doesn't matter, I'm connected with the infinite source. You know, Prabhupada tells this story. I'm sure many of you have heard the story. We did this in our children's books, if any of you have seen our lingerie books, perhaps. So we told this story there. And Prabhupada talks about this little boy. In our books, we gave him a name. We called him Raju. We just made up that name. Because Prabhupada doesn't give him a name. So this little boy is very poor, and he goes to school, and at the school, the teacher says, we're going to have a big festival, and everybody has to bring something, potluck. Prabhupada didn't use the word potluck, but potluck. So what are you going to bring? So the boy says, I don't know, we're very poor. And he goes and asks his mother, he says, you know, what should I bring? And she said, we don't have anything to bring. And he's crying. He says, I'm going to get into trouble. The other boys will tease me. You know, the teacher will give me a hard time. What can I do? And she said, well, I've heard that there's someone named Dinabandhu, a friend of the poor, and he will help you. And he says, oh, Mommy, where can I find Dinabandhu? And she said, well, the sages find him in the forest. So there just happened to be a forest between his house and the school. That's how he wrote it in the story, anyway. And so on his way to school, the little boy goes into the forest, and he's just calling out, Dinabandhu, 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 Dinabandhu. And he was crying. And when we call for Krishna really in, kind of an agony, you know, that I have to find you. Usually we call for Krishna, hey Krishna, you want to show up today? Okay, well, I got other things to do. Let me know when you want to come by. You know, but he was like a desperation. Dina Bandhu, Dina, and Krishna came. Krishna came. He said, yes, what would you like? So he's a little boy, and he's kind of simple, and he says, I need to bring something to school for the festival. And so the Lord said, well, you just tell your teacher you'll bring yogurt. And the day of the festival, you come here and call for me again. So he went to school. He said, I'm going to bring yogurt. So the teacher thinks, yeah, it's a big festival, hundreds of people. He thought yogurt is going to be a big pot, you know? A great big pot. Gita Nagari, I used to make yogurt out of our milk. And remember, we would have pots this big. You know, we'd have to pour this 3-gallon or 5-gallon. And make our yogurt. So that's what the teacher was envisioning. Right? So then the little boy goes into the forest the day of the festival. Dinabandhu, Dinabandhu, Dinabandhu. Yes, my child, I'm here. What would you like? Well, you said I should come back and ask you for yogurt. He says, okay. And he gives him a little pot. You know those little teeny tiny clay cups you get in India? Right? Now they usually use paper or plastic, but you know, remember them? You see the guys on the train platforms selling chai in the little tiny cups. So he has a little tiny cup of yogurt. He's just a little boy. He's kind of simple. Right? So he just, oh, I got my yogurt for the festival, you know? So he's all happy going to school with his yogurt, and he gives his teacher the cup, and his teacher wasn't exactly very pleased. And he says, what is this? He was angry. And he just took it and spilled it. Said, this is nothing. So this isn't even enough for one person. And he puts it down and he looks. You know? And he dumps it out again. And he looks. And he saw the boy brought a little pot that was unlimited. So when we're connected with Krishna, it's like that. We're a little pot. We're very small. But we're connected with Krishna. We're unlimited. So we have this confidence and this gratitude that Krishna, when I'm connected with you, that no matter how much I lose, how much is taken away from me, still you are always meeting my needs. Yoga Kshema Bhamya. That is the mood of the devotee. And they're so grateful for that connection with Krishna. And they're grateful that they can offer whatever they have to Krishna in service. And then Krishna is so grateful that he wants to give to the devotee. And this way there's a competition of giving rather than a competition of taking. So this is the difference between, the essential difference between the merchant relationship and the loving relationship. The merchant relationship is a competition of taking. It's a calculation for how much can I get. And the loving relationship is a competition for how much can I give. And when we have that mood, we're full of gratitude, and when we're full of gratitude, we're full of joy. Now, if this seems like it's way above anything you could think about today, if you look at this and go, well, that's talking about pure devotees. And I can't do that. So let's take some little steps, you know, at least some little steps, that how can I feel grateful for the opportunity to serve Krishna? I mean, we can feel grateful that we understand this philosophy, even theoretically, yes? We can be grateful for the association of other people who are trying to find Krishna. And if you forget how wonderful it is, just work in the world for a little while. You know? And you should appreciate then the devotees. I mean, what I found that when I had a job, that I noticed that that people who aren't devotees, people who are not God conscious, they don't even have a theoretical idea of things like humility and gratitude and tolerance, and it's not even a concept in their mind at all. You know, they don't even acknowledge on a theoretical level that they may have envy or lust or greed. It's just outside of their awareness at all. They're really not introspective. And I came to appreciate the devotees and be grateful for the devotees, even if they were faking it. At least they were faking the right thing. Do you know what I'm saying? Whereas the materialistic people, they weren't even trying to fake it. Do you understand what I'm saying? So the devotees, they may have been doing the false humility. Oh, I'm so fallen. a little silly. But at least they had a concept that they were supposed to be humble. Whereas I found with people who weren't at all God conscious, they didn't even have that concept. You're just thinking, wow, you're really arrogant, but they didn't have any sense of that. So to be very grateful for the devotees, even though, you know, the other devotees may have their imperfections. Of course, we forget that I have my imperfections. We think, I have nothing that anyone else has to tolerate, only I have to be tolerated. But be grateful for the devotees. Be grateful for prasadam. I think that there's a movement in the world towards healthy eating and eating that's ecologically conscious, and we are able to eat in a way that's cosmically balanced. Grateful for the kirtan, such a wonderful process of Krishna consciousness. To be grateful even for air and light and flowers and so many things in our life. But mostly be grateful that I can develop a loving relationship with Krishna. And once we do that with Krishna, this is very important, once we do that with Krishna, then we can do it with other living entities. If you try to have a loving relationship with other living entities before first establishing the connection with Krishna, you'll probably go into a merchant mentality. And the reason for that is that if we don't have that relationship with Krishna, this mutual gratitude, we'll feel very empty. And we'll end up going into this place of I need and I deserve and I've worked so hard and what are you doing for me? But once we establish this with Krishna, we feel full in our gratitude with Krishna, we are then able to have relationships of gratitude with other living entities. Now, one way that we can display our gratitude for other living entities, and this doesn't apply so much to Krishna, and it's to appreciate their sacrifices, not just the results. So one is to have no mood of entitlement, and the other is to appreciate other people's austerity. Because that's what I want people to appreciate from me. I don't really want people to appreciate the result. Because can we fully control the result anyway? Can we? No. So if someone just said, wow, you know, this sabji is delicious. But, you know, I'm not absolutely in control over whether or not the sabji I make is delicious, am I? No. I mean, I've sometimes been in the kitchen for hours and somehow everything didn't work. And this happened to me recently at my son's house. So I was using their oven, and there's, you know, the turning on the oven, and then there's a turning on of the timer. You know where I'm going with this, right? So I was timing something on the stove, and then I was heating up the oven for something else. So I had the oven on, and I had some stuff in the oven, and when the stuff on the stove finished, I turned off the timer on the oven, but I didn't turn off the timer. I turned off the oven. And then I'm thinking it's taking a really long time for the stuff to cook. So this happens sometimes, isn't it? Right? We do our best. We sacrifice. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't work. And so when people just appreciate the results, it feels a little hollow to us. No matter how wonderful the results are. I mean, we say thank you, but it feels a little hollow. What we really want to be appreciated in ourselves is our effort and our sacrifices. You can tell this if you listen to people, because that's what they'll talk about. They'll talk about how many hours they worked and how many things they gave up, that they didn't get enough sleep. They'll tell you about their sacrifices. And that's really what we want people to be grateful for. So when we are grateful for other jivas, now you can't really be grateful for Krishna like this, because Krishna doesn't really sacrifice like that. It's kind of a different category. But when we're looking at other jivas, we can notice the sacrifices that are under the result, no matter how the result turns out. And it's very sad, it's very sad, that we desperately want other people to notice our sacrifices, and we often aren't even aware of other people's sacrifices. It's out of our conscious awareness. You know, it's such a sad and ironic thing that that's what we want other people to see in us. You know, we want other people to see, well, I worked so hard on this, and I gave up this, and I did this for you, and right? So to practice seeing that in others, to practice meditating on, you know, what is this person really doing? And that will please Krishna so much. That will please Krishna so much. Not to meditate on other sacrifices so they'll reciprocate with you, but to meditate on other sacrifices because it will please Krishna. You know, how we tend to do that, I think, after someone dies. Then we make a list of all their sacrifices. I mean, I'm sure Krishna's happy at that too. But if we can do that generally in our lives. So those are some little ways that we can at least make steps towards having a truly loving relationship of gratitude. And if you can remember way back to the beginning of this class, gratitude was one of the 5 items of knowledge, which was one of the 40 items of Krishna's qualities. So why would gratitude be part of knowledge? We think of knowledge as like knowing where Oklahoma is, or knowing how to drive a car, or how to program a computer. Why would gratitude be one of the 5 parts of knowledge?
There's only...
Yeah?
Knowledge is something which is received. It's a descending process.
Oh, okay.
And gratitude enables that reception.
That was a beautiful answer. Did you all hear that? That knowledge is a descending process and gratitude enables that reception. Have you ever tried to teach somebody who wasn't grateful for what you were teaching them? Did that work? Can you teach somebody who's not grateful that you're teaching them? Does anything go in there? No, nothing. That was really nice. I would never have thought of that. Yes?
Gratitude shows humility, actually.
It does, doesn't it? Gratitude shows humility. I didn't want to use that word so much, but yeah. I think humility scares people. They think humility means everyone's going to abuse me and kick me around. But yeah, gratitude shows humility. In fact, gratitude is one of the prime evidences of humility. If a person is always going around going, oh, I'm so bad, I'm so low, I'm so bad, then they're not humble. Humble people are full of gratitude. And gratitude, we talked about, makes you very happy. If you're full of humility and gratitude, everything you get is just wonderful. Why else would gratitude be part of the mantra? Yes?
It shows that you're recognizing the sacrifices of others or what Krishna has given you, what other people give you.
So you're recognizing, you must be aware. People who aren't grateful are kind of in a fog of ignorance, aren't they? Ignorance. Right? If somebody's not grateful, they're ignoring. They're ignoring what Krishna's doing for them at every moment. They're ignoring other sacrifices. They're not in knowledge. In order to be grateful, you have to be aware. Gratefulness without awareness is impossible, isn't it? And if we were really aware of how much Krishna is doing for us at every moment, and what about other people? Ouch. Are there a lot of other people doing a lot for us all the time? Right? Isn't it like that? I mean, think of how many people criticize government. I mean, there's a lot to criticize in the government, but you know, the government does a lot for us. How could you be arrogant if you had an awareness, right? It'd be impossible. It would just be impossible. I think one of the reasons, well, this is deep, one of the reasons that we don't want to be aware is we wouldn't be able to maintain our arrogance, would we, even for a moment? I mean, it'd just be impossible to maintain some feeling of entitlement. You know, I did this, and 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 I earned this, and I deserve this. But if I had some awareness of how many people are doing how much for me, you know, down to the road workers that are hired by the government and the people who take care of the telephones, and, you know, what to speak of God, how much He is doing for me. Wow! Could I maintain my false ego even for a moment? It'd be pretty hard, wouldn't it? So you can see why we don't want to be aware. It's a real challenge to the I am great. Any other thoughts about why gratitude is part of knowledge? Yes?
It helps us to get more and more of knowledge. Knowledge comes to us. We don't have to...
Oh, I like that. Knowledge will come to us naturally. Kind of opens us up, doesn't it? Yeah. All right. Some other thoughts as to why gratitude is part of knowledge? Yes?
The ultimate knowledge is Krishna, and gratitude is very attractive quality that attracts Krishna.
It attracts Krishna, who is ultimate knowledge. Yes. You know, there's a kind of compassion for Krishna. I mean, just think of how we feel when we work hard, even for a few hours, and nobody notices. It's sort of yucky, isn't it? Right? Nobody notices. Well, how do you think Krishna feels? I mean, he's complete in and of himself, but still, out of love, he'd like some acknowledgement. So maybe we can think of at least one area in our life for which right now we're sort of dull, and see if we can become aware and grateful. Just pick one thing. Maybe I can become aware and grateful of our breathing or digestion or something. You know, something simple like that. Or I can become aware of and grateful for the knowledge in the Bhagavad Gita or the knowledge of Krishna's name. And how I can start noticing and being aware of the other jivas in my life also, not to get something from those jivas, but to please Krishna. So anyone have any further questions? Can't sit like that for too long anymore. Anyone have any further questions or comments or anything they'd like to add?
I have one.
Yes.
I want to share what you just told, really passionately. I came to know that one Srila Prabhupada's disciple, Lilananda Prabhu, forgive me for pronouncing. I heard that he's no more now, but he was undergoing dialysis almost every day or other day. So when I came to know that, I approached him and asked Prabhu, is it okay if I do some mantra? And what he told is, actually, I'm ashamed of myself, because the government is spending so much money on this useless problem.
That's what he said.
Generally, normally, I heard complaints like, my insurance is not covering this, that, that's still proper, this helpful. But anyway, you came with something, so we'll use it for something. Can you make, can you buy a shed for all the Krishna's tools, the budget, you know, getting rusted? That was amazing, really.
Wow. What a wonderful example. Did everybody hear that?
No, but
okay, so he's saying that there was one, it was a disciple of Prabhupada, and he was getting dialysis.
Leelananda.
And so he offered, can I give you some donation to help with your expenses? And he said, well, I'm feeling really bad that the government is wasting so much money on this useless body. And he was saying that, you know, generally people complain, oh, I don't get enough insurance coverage, the entitlement thing, right? And he said, well, you brought some donation. All right, well, maybe you'd like to build a shed to keep Krishna's tools in. This is very wonderful. Yes? Okay, does gratitude come spontaneously or is this something you cultivate? Because you can feel it intellectually but not emotionally. Well, this is a big question in general. I'd say that that's a question about almost everything we're talking about in spiritual life. I mean, tonight we're focusing on gratitude, but you could ask that question about anything. You could ask that question about, you know, a taste for chanting or anything. And the answer is both. It's something that comes spontaneously, but you have to cultivate it. It's just Prabhupada and Rupa Goswami, they give the example of a child learning how to walk. So walking in a human child is innate. So as soon as a child is born, one of the things that the midwife, the doctor, look for is, does the child have walking ability? It's part of what's called the Apgar score. So you hold up the newborn, and I mean really newborn, they do this right after birth. They hold up the baby in a standing position and they see if the child instinctively puts one foot in front of another. So the instinct to walk is there in the human child, as is the instinct to talk. However, they also have to be cultivated. Although they are natural and they will manifest spontaneously, the child also has to be in the right environment. If a child's in an environment where no one talks to them, you know, if the child's being abused or neglected and no one's talking to them, then they will not learn language, even though it's innate in them. And if the child had no ability, no, it was hampered in some way, not allowed, you know, they wouldn't walk. They have to be given some facility. You know, if you carry them on your back 24 hours a day, they wouldn't learn how to walk because they wouldn't have the facility to do so. So are these qualities that Krishna has, these are also our qualities as the soul. We are naturally grateful beings. Now, I think that most of us would like to jump from being just naturally materialists to being naturally spiritualists without having to make any effort, because the effort is awkward. And that might happen in rare circumstances, but generally it doesn't happen. So in education, this is educational theory, they say there's four steps to learning. And if I had a board, I would, but I'm not going to draw on the walls. So you're going to have to imagine. Can you all imagine? Okay? So we're going to have four steps. One step, two steps, three steps, four steps. Okay, here's my imaginary flip chart. Here, all right? So on the first step, we're going to write unconscious incompetence. On the next step, we're going to write conscious incompetence. On the next step, we're going to write conscious competence. And then the last step, we're going to write unconscious competence. So unconscious incompetence. You don't know, and you don't know that you don't know. So most materialistic people are in the don't know that they don't know place. They're arrogant, they're ungrateful, they have merchant relationships, and they don't have a clue that that's what they're like. They don't know at all. They think, I'm a wonderful person, everything I do is great, I don't know why the world is against me. So this is unconscious incompetence. Now, when you take up spiritual life, one of the first things that happens is called conscious incompetence. It's a very awkward, painful, unpleasant thing. But it's a sign that there's progress. I mean, I remember when my oldest child was young and he became aware that other people were walking. You know, he'd notice other people were walking and he couldn't walk. And that was his impetus to try to walk. So you become aware, like you're aware, I don't really feel gratitude in my heart. That's a very good sign. Grossly materialistic people do not have that awareness. They just don't. If you ask some just grossly materialistic person, are you a grateful person? What will they answer? What will they answer?
They'll say yes.
They'll say yes. I mean, unless they have some kind of psychological disease. They'll say yes. They'll say, of course, I'm very grateful. And they can even give you evidences. I take care of my old sick mother, right? I do this, I do that. They can give you evidences as to why they're grateful. So you become aware, oh, I'm not really grateful. I'm not really humble. I remember Bhakti Chuswami saying that as he progressed in Krishna consciousness, it seemed that he got more and more fallen. So you'll become aware. This awareness makes one feel uncomfortable, which is how you feel. That's very good. Until you feel uncomfortable, you're not going to do anything. Therefore, the Bhagavatam says two people are happy, the fool and the transcendentalist. Right? And you come to this point that you're neither. You're no longer a fool, but you're not yet a transcendentalist. It's not a pleasant place to be. But it gives you impetus to do something about it. You follow? Or like sometimes people think they're healthy and they go for a regular checkup and the doctor says you have this serious... They didn't know. Now they know. And once they know, they have to do something about it. So then there's the conscious competence. The conscious competence is a deliberate, thoughtful effort with some determination and planning to do something about it. And we want to avoid this stage too. You know, we don't want to become aware of our faults. We want them to just be fixed automatically. And then, you know, if we are aware, then we want to just say, okay, Krishna, make me grateful. Okay, that's it. Hare Krishna, now I'm grateful. But that's what we mean by sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti, even raganuga sadhana bhakti. Vaidhi sadhana bhakti and raganuga sadhana bhakti. Sadhana means practice. And Krishna calls this in the Bhagavad Gita abhyas yoga. Abhyas means to repeat. That's what it means. Isn't that what we mean by practice? Yes, it means to repeat. That's what you're going to practice the piano. What are you going to do? You're going to be repeating. And there's going to be some deliberate, intentional effort involved. And it's going to feel, you know, awkward. It's going to feel a little artificial. You know, if you've watched babies learning how to walk, I tell you, at first it looks very awkward and artificial. They're not very graceful. Yes, the little babies? When they're first standing up? Are they graceful? They're anything but graceful. And where do they spend most of the time? On the floor. You know, and they're really focused. If you watch a baby learning, they're really, really focused, and they're putting all of their focus and energy. Now, we don't do that anymore, I hope. I mean, unless there's something wrong with you. I just walk. I don't think about it at all. It's automatic. But there was a time when it wasn't automatic. There was a time when all of our energy was, okay, move this right, and they're walking. They don't even do it. They kind of move with their hip. That's why we call them toddlers. You know, they kind of have this strange gait that they walk with, and they really have to put all their energy into it. They can't be walking and playing with a toy. You know, it all has to go into walking. So there's a time. Prabhupada calls this a hard struggle with determination, where we're inviting sadhana bhakti, and we're really, okay, I need to think about Krishna now. Krishna, Krishna, okay. Krishna. What am I going to think about Krishna? Well, I could... Yeah. Okay, let's see, I'm supposed to be grateful. What could I be grateful for today? Well, let's see. I guess I could be grateful... I mean, I was thinking this today, I was typing on my computer, and I thought, well, my fingers move without pain. They always move without... I very rarely have any pain. I don't have any kind of joint problems. And I thought, but that's not true for everybody. I was speaking in front of a big audience the other day, and a thought flashed through my mind. I wonder how many people in this audience right now are in pain. So, you know, what can I be grateful for today? We might make a deliberate effort. Okay, today I'm going to be grateful for light. I'm going to be grateful I don't live on one of those planets in the universe where the sun doesn't shine, because there are such planets in the universe. Today I'm going to be grateful I'm human. I mean, these are things we don't think about, right? Today I'm going to be grateful that my body works, basically. I mean, I don't know if anybody's body works perfectly in the Kali Yuga, but, you know, that it basically works. I can function. Or today I'm going to be grateful, like, everybody here, we all have more clothes than we obviously need, right? Anybody here have just absolutely how many clothes they need? That would be like two sets. Do you all have more than two sets of clothes? Even I travel with three sets. I'm going to be grateful I have more clothes than what I need. What about food? Do we have more food than we need?
Yeah, we're going to find out.
Huh?
We'll find out
in a minute. So you choose. But because you're doing something that's natural, you don't have to make a deliberate effort forever. And what happens by choosing is the natural feeling and natural emotion does kick in. Now, whenever it kicks in, nourish it. So when you're making a deliberate effort, an intellectual effort, with determination and willpower, which is a lot of what Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti is about, then at some point, something emotional and desire will kick in. There's thinking, feeling, willing. So thinking, thoughts, and desires. So if you think something, your desires and your emotions will touch it every once in a while. Does that make sense to you? I mean, I make a habit regularly to just be grateful for the fact that my body is basically functional. It's not always fully functional, frankly, but that it's basically functional. So my thought about my hands today was very spontaneous. That was not a deliberate effort, and it also had some emotion in it. Do you follow? But that comes because I make a habit to say, oh, I can walk, I can talk, I can hear, I can see, I can think. Thank you, Krishna. So it will come spontaneously if you cultivate it. If you don't cultivate it, it's not likely it will come spontaneously. Is that okay? But cultivate it with that mood that I'm trying to cultivate spontaneity. And whenever there's a little emotion or desire that gets sparked, nourish it and go into it more. And then that will make the spontaneity happen more and more often and more deeply. Is that okay? Does that help?
Mataji, how do you nourish it when you...
Allow it. Many times we run away from our emotions and desires. We're afraid of them. Allow it. Look at it. Allow yourself to feel it. Why do we run away from the emotions and desire of gratitude? Because it's very connected with
Krishna.
Krishna and you were talking about?
Yeah.
Humility. That's why we run away from it. Because if I go deep into the emotion and the desire connected with gratitude, then I'm also going to go very deep into humility. And that's what we're running away from. Of all the things we're running away from, it's that that we're really running away from. We might give up lust, anger, greed, envy, but we ain't going to give up our pride. That's the main thing that's holding us. So allow it. When it gets sparked, allow it. Allow yourself to feel it. Give yourself permission. It's okay to feel this one. And then it will happen more and more and more. You'll see it's very nice. Is that okay? Sure. And just, you know, if it happens even for 30 seconds, celebrate it. Really. Like the little kid, you know, they stand up for 30 seconds and they're all... Right? And then you call your parents and they stood up for 30 seconds. Yes?
I just would like to share one example of Prabhupada.
Okay, that would be lovely.
I'm adding the same, whatever you said, like Prabhupada also said the same thing. I think when Prabhupada entered into the temple house, there were so many devotees, and it was a famous example, I think. And everybody paid the humble obeisances to Prabhupada, one chapel to them, only except the Brahmananda. And he said, and then he came to, Brahmananda came to Prabhupada and asked Prabhupada, Prabhupada, I don't have feeling to pay humble obeisances. That internal feelings I don't have. Prabhupada said, but still you have to do this. Artificially, externally, you do this, then one day it will come like the spontaneous reward.
Yes.
One day you will go. So you have to cultivate this activity.
Yes. But we should, it shouldn't be cultivated just mechanically.
Mechanically, but at least for the, like, neophyte.
But we want to cultivate the thought, at least. Manmana bhava mad bhakto. Just the external behavior is worth something, but I tell you, it is not worth much. And if all you're doing is an external bodily behavior, it will be extremely slow. So get somewhere on the subtle body involved. Somewhere on the desire, emotion, or thought. Get that somewhere involved, somehow or other. It doesn't even matter how. Just get it involved in what you're doing in bhakti. Otherwise, it'll be long. And you know, you don't want to stay very long where you're neither a fool nor a transcendentalist. It's not a nice place to be. You want to go to being a transcendentalist, otherwise, I'm sorry to say this, you go back to being a fool. Because it's very, very difficult. It's not natural for the soul to stay in a place where they're not happy. And the place of conscious incompetence is not a happy place. Conscious competence is a little better, but conscious incompetence is really not a happy place. You do not want to stay there very long. I mean, think of it as like a place you want to stay as short a time as you possibly can.
It's a really beautiful
Yeah.
answer.
Hmm?
It's a very beautiful answer.
Well, thank you. Yes, Prabhu.
Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna.
Toilet, I'll just take 1 minute.
Sure. I'm just worried about people getting hungry and going to work.
First of all, you know, I would like to thank you very much for this very practical class, very practical exams that we can relate to. I'm very grateful to you for that. And so one thing that if you can give a quick answer, that's okay, but this gratitude stays when everything is nice and fine and happy, but when things are not going well, the thoughts and the
become
feelings
black.
Doesn't go to that feeling. So how can we...
Even when everything isn't going well, it's not that everything isn't going well. I remember a devotee coming up to me and saying, Krishna took everything away. I said, you're walking. Seriously. I know people who can't walk, okay? And I mean, I know one devotee friend jumped in the Ganga when he was young, became a quadriplegic. But he didn't even get everything taken away. His family take care of him, he has friends, he has a beautiful voice, leads kirtan. There's always something. There's always something. I mean, I there was when we used to run a Gurukula, one of the devotees used to give me a lot of books. One of the books she gave me was of a story of a man who was a prisoner of war during Vietnam, captured by the North Vietnamese. And I mean, this man really, boy, did he have pretty much everything. You know, he was put into solitary confinement. His bed was made of concrete to which he was shackled. You know, he was given unhealthy food to eat. He was full of diseases and parasites. And you know, no communication allowed with his family, no communication allowed with the other prisoners. They developed a code by which they could communicate with each other. But it might take 24 hours to tap out one sentence to communicate. And if they were caught communicating, they were beaten. How long did he live like that? I don't know, 6 or 7 years?
Wow.
But in that time, he found God. And he was grateful that he could think. He was grateful he could remember the religious teachings of his youth. And somehow the people in this prison, you know what they talked about? They talked about God and religion. That's all they talked about, at the risk of beatings and torture and one sentence every 24 hours. They found something to hold on to that they could be grateful for. So, I mean, most of us in our lives always have something that we can be grateful for. Even when things are very, very, very dark. Sometimes they get very dark. Sometimes they do. I remember there's a story I have it on my computer of this one woman who, God forget what disease she got, but she gradually lost pretty much all of her ability to function. She couldn't move any of her muscles. She couldn't see. And she had two daughters. And her husband took her home from the hospital and said, I want to care for her at home. And so she's just lying in bed. You know, she really couldn't do anything. And she started saying, you know, dear Lord, what is the use of my life? I don't have anything. And she heard, Super Soul said to her, use the health you have. Use the health I have? I don't have any health. And again, use the health you have. So what do I have? She thought, well, I can hear. And she could move one finger slightly. So she started focusing on that. She started focusing on her ability to hear, and she developed a way of communicating with her family with her finger. And gradually, over years, with some backwards steps, by focusing on what was good, she regained her health entirely. Really, it's really amazing story that she just somehow focused on what she had that was a blessing in her life. I mean, I recently visited some devotees whose child is severely handicapped, and she was born normal, and like when she was 2 days old, the nurse made a mistake. They caused the child to be permanently brain damaged. Very, very severely handicapped. And the parent said to me, but she laughs a lot. She can't speak. She can't eat. She has to be fed through a tube. She laughs a lot. And we tell her stories about Krishna, and we sing to her about Krishna, and at least she laughs. And they really appreciated that joy of her laughter. So again, it's not always easy to do. You know, if you have pain that's a 10 out of 10, or your kid's in the hospital with leukemia, or your business just failed, your house just burned down, your wife ran off with another man, whatever, the catastrophes that we go through in life. What to speak if it all happens at once, you know? Hare Krishna. But there's always something. At least we're grateful for the fact that we know that we're not this body. I'm grateful for the fact that we know that we're a spiritual being, that I'm not really in this world, that I'm not really of this world. That we have some higher knowledge, some higher place to go. At least we can be grateful for that. If that's all you have, that's kind of a bad thing. And I was just talking to one of my god sisters who told me that her husband now has completely lost his memory, completely. And his mental faculties are just gone. Some kind of old age dementia, just gone. She said, but he's always chanting Hare Krishna. He's just chanting all day long, and he's completely surrendered to whatever Krishna wants. So, of course, you know, we all hope that we have a life full of, you know, money, health, friends. But when something is shaken, we find something. It's not easy. I know it's not easy. The rare person who's never been through dark caves, you know. But this one devotee I know, she's born in the movement, very nice devotee parents. She came to me one time and she said, "Oh, Krishna must not love me because I've never had any trouble in my life." She said, "Everything in my life has always been good, and I'm always hearing that if Krishna really favors you, he takes something away, so I must not be a good devotee." I thought, we have strange preaching sometimes in our Hare Krishna. I think it's practice. And as I say, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes you feel like your whole world is crumbling, and you're just saying, "Thank you, Krishna. I love you, Krishna. Thank you, Krishna." And inside you're going, "I hate you, Krishna." But at least you're saying, "I love you, Krishna. Thank you, Krishna. I love you, Krishna. Thank you, Krishna." And then it sparks something. Is that all right? I don't think we ever said, you know, it's always going to be easy. It gets to a point that it's easy. It gets to a point that it's spontaneous and much easier. It doesn't stay a hard struggle with determination forever. Because we're dealing with something that's natural. We're dealing with something that we already have that's innate. We're not dealing with something artificial that we're learning. We're reviving, we're reawakening something that's already who we are. And therefore, it does come to a point that things start coming more and more naturally. All right, we should definitely end now, I think. Otherwise, you won't get a chance to take prasadam and get enough sleep and get up in the morning. And then you'll never want me to come again. So, thank you very much for having me here and being so kind. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.